services, and organizations that benefit you as a citizen of Forsyth County. Welcome to Empowering You, your host, Brian Anthony.
Good afternoon. It's noon here in the Triad. This is Empowering You. Thank you again for joining us. I'm your host, General Manager of WSNC 90.5 FM, Brian Anthony. Empowering You is a show where we try to highlight local nonprofits in our city, county, and this region, and the many, many services they provide the citizens of Forsyth County and the Triad. We also focus on the local corporate initiatives that are designed to benefit you as a citizen of the region in which we live, which is a great place. Not only will we feature the nonprofits and the corporate community initiatives, we also hear from our local entities like the health department, the city of Winston-Salem, Winston-Salem-Forsyth County Schools, all packed into a one-hour show. We hope that you make it a point to join us each and every Sunday following Money-Making Conversations at noon. Now, this week is the final week for the year 2022. Obviously, the school here is going on vacation for the next couple of weeks for Christmas break. We'll take the same break, but the shows continue. We'll highlight some of the previous programs that we've had this year that are still relevant and we find interesting for you. Hopefully, you get great information out of this show. That's why you come here. In 2023, we're going to dig deeper into the nonprofit realm and get more into the grassroots level. We'll have a new host probably in the middle of January, towards the end of January. That host we introduced last week is Alvin Atkinson. I feel like he's going to do a knockout job with his history in the nonprofit sector here in the Triad for some years through Winston-Salem State and in his own mission as well. So don't forget, anytime you miss one of these shows, if you happen to miss it, we have it available for you on our website, as is all of our public affairs programming, just by logging on to WSNC Radio and clicking Media on our navigation bar. You can also access our website on our free mobile app that you can download, like I said, for free in your device's app store, whether that's Apple or Play Store. On Empowering You, every Sunday, last Sunday we missed it because we had a guest on that I wanted to get into the Christmas atmosphere with Senior Services last week. So thank them for coming on. But we're back on our normal schedule. This week we got the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools. Earlier this year in May, we introduced and talked about before it became fruition into the school district in the fall. The code of character, conduct, and support that was being implemented in the school district. And today, we're going to update that. I've got two guests today. I started off with Dr. Lionel Cato, who's the Chief Officer of Learning Supports last time. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
You know you're going to have to get up closer to this microphone.
Oh,
he's soft spoken. He's soft spoken, but yeah, he's very serious about this mission, and I'm glad about it. We also have as a guest Tamia Andring, who's a social worker in the school district as well. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Let's go back. Let's refresh everything. Let's talk about what is code of character, conduct, and support. Remind the folks.
And so, thank you for having us here. A couple years ago, we take a look at our data as a school system and realized that we were relying heavily on exclusionary practices in our schools when students misbehaved.
Okay.
And so, of course, students not being in the classroom, whether it's in-school suspension or out-of-school suspension, is not what we want, because if they're not there, they can't learn
right. What
we need them to learn. And so we undertook this project of recalibrating our code of conduct then into a code of conduct, character, and support.
Okay.
How do we not just respond to student disciplinary issues, but how do we support and promote positive behavior? How do we support them in learning from the mistakes that they've made? And then how do we move forward with helping our parents and some of our resources to be more effective in helping to support the students at school.
Okay. You mentioned exclusionary punishments. Define that for me.
anything that takes a student out of the classroom, even if it's in school suspension, they're still not in their regular classroom, mm-hmm. and they're not under instruction. And so in school suspension, of course, out of school suspension, anything that excludes them from the classroom. So that's how we define exclusionary practices.
Okay. And there was both use and overuse of this in previous years, I'm assuming.
Yes, absolutely. You know, Winston-Salem Forsyth is not different from other school systems in that those practices generally are disproportionately applied mm-hmm. to some students more than others, in particular mm-hmm. students of color and students with exceptionalities. Mm-hmm. However, you know, across the board, we have too many students that were missing too many hours and days out of the classroom.
Okay. We touched on this, and I want to go back to this again. The position that a teacher is in, depending on their ethnicity, has something to do with, for instance, a teacher may have something that happens in their culture that they handle a certain way. The student may come from an atmosphere or culture that is totally different in its perception of what it, what the expectation is. We talked about that. Is, yes. that, is that accurate as well?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely accurate. Something that's kind of hard to drill down into, but we know that research tells us that the majority of our teaching force mm-hmm. are white female, which is probably not going to change in the foreseeable future, if at all.
Okay.
Not that it needs to, mm-hmm. But there needs to be an understanding of different cultures and communication patterns and things of that nature. There's sometimes that, you know, some cultures may communicate in a way that may be seen as threatening mm-hmm. to a teacher, mm-hmm. Which could lead to other issues in the classroom, behaviors, so on and so forth. And so that's definitely something that we need to be aware of and continue to train on and be cognizant of.
Okay. We also established, I believe, how these suspensions affect students' learning because they're not in the classroom, obviously. These interventions also have an extra added step. It doesn't make sense, as we talked about, suspending a student from school, then accepting them back without knowing what they did and how to fix it.
Correct. We're working on calibrating and being more consistent with our disciplinary response cycle. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to let Ms. Andring jump in on the interventions piece of it. But we know that students are going to misbehave because mm-hmm. they're young.
They're students.
They're going to make mistakes.
Grown folks still misbehave.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so how do we get from a discipline referral mm-hmm. to the interventions to, the consequences? There mm-hmm. are going to be consequences for the mistakes. Sometimes those consequences may be exclusionary. But how do we restore the student back into the school community? How do we help them learn from those mistakes? Mm-hmm. And how do we close the loop with our parents mm-hmm. and other school personnel so that we can support the student going forward? I'll let Ms. Andring, who's very involved in the interventions piece of it, kind of mm-hmm. chime in on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the big question that came up is, if you suspend them, what are they learning? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we really saw the gap happening, is you can suspend them over and over, but they're not actually learning the skill
right.
to stay in the classroom.
Right.
And that's really where these interventions are coming into play, is if they're getting suspended or if they're having a consequence, what do we need to teach them in the meantime so mm-hmm. we don't repeat ourselves? Because
okay.
I think within the schools, we're going to see the same kids repeating the same behavior mm-hmm. if we don't actually teach them skills to do something different.
We're going to get into the details of that. One last thing. In our last discussion, one of the concerns that I had, and we both talked about it, can you update me? Because we talked in May before it was presented to the community.
Yes.
Before the community really got involved, you had several town meetings and those kind of things to give the community and parents a chance to have their input. We were definitely concerned about information getting out on social media that was incorrect, and these particular workshops and town meetings having the purpose of it to give everybody an opportunity to get on the same page at the same time.
Yes.
Before school started, before this implementation, how did that process go?
It went surprisingly well. Mm-hmm. We probably had in those community forums, and we did some online things too, roughly right at 100 different community individuals that participated. Mm-hmm. There was some misinformation out there, but it was much less than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And then we anticipated also in the midst of a school board election year. Mm-hmm. And so there were several candidates that would show up and they would ask questions. I'm very respectful. Mm-hmm. Nothing got out of control or anything. Mm-hmm. Good suggestions. And we actually made some adjustments to some of the language and some of the things in the code based on feedback from those particular groups. But for the most part, people were mainly supportive that came out and just wanted to, voice that support and give us some additional things to think about how we could make it stronger. Mm-hmm. And, there were a handful of individuals that were just kind of indifferent. They were just coming out to hear more about it because they had heard things and just wanted to, get some good information.
Yeah.
But it went very well.
Good. All right. From there, let's go into its implementation. You've got the community behind you. You've got all the information out there. So how does the district get this process moving in terms of orientation and getting the staff and the district trained on these processes?
So over the summer, we started with our first what we call the Summer Institute. Mm-hmm. All of our administrators and representatives of the school teams, mm-hmm. what we call a core behavior team, mm-hmm. came together to learn the initial promotion and prevention strategies that we were going to train our teachers on. Mm-hmm. The administrators got a bigger piece around the some of the initial intervention to just the big picture of what the year would look like, the different groups of individuals that would be trained and what their roles would be in helping to monitor data and helping to onboard their students and their teachers when they got back and their parents, mm-hmm. and the different pieces that the district would train groups on, like our school resource officers, mm-hmm. our bus drivers, our custodians, our cafeteria workers, how all of that would roll out at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
And so over the summer, we also brought together our initial meeting of social workers and counselors and school psychologists for Student Services mm-hmm. Summer Institute, where they learned the initial intervention and also learned about the code in general.
Okay, good. So we were able to roll this out at the beginning of the school year.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very, very good. All right, since school is in session and kids will be kids, I know it couldn't be too long before the intervention part had to get involved. So how, not necessarily how early, let's talk about the intervention stage and how you implemented that part.
Yes, I mean, every school is a little bit different of how this is looking, mm-hmm. but I think something the district did well is we got trained on the first intervention actually before school starts, because in full honesty, kids are kids on day one.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
we walk into that building and you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think a lot of us were just trying to get immersed in what is this new code. We got to get this going as quickly as possible and mm-hmm. finding new systems mm-hmm. because really, these interventions are in collaboration with the admin. Mm-hmm. You know, if a kid gets disciplined, which is on the admin side, mm-hmm. how are they transferring it for us to be able to do those interventions? What are we looking at? So I think on day one, we were getting this going.
Okay, right.
As a social worker in the district, what is your role in this particular code of conduct?
So if you look at the disciplinary cycle, if you're going to look at all of that, really every accountable consequence is going to be followed up with a restorative intervention. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So anytime a kid gets in trouble, really we should be involved in mm-hmm, that piece. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's where we get to evaluate where social workers, school counselors, psychologists are seeing what intervention is appropriate for this situation. Because every situation is also going to be different. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, some we learn restorative conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we restore this relationship? Can we do this in a 5-minute conversation of, hey, when you said this to Sally, mm-hmm. you know, this really upset her. How can we mend this relationship? Mm-hmm. But then some are a little bit more serious, where we have some kids who are checking in every single day in guidance office and also checking out, how did today go? Mm-hmm. What did you work on today? Where do we need to add extra supports? Mm-hmm. So I think depending on the situation and depending on the kid, we have to really evaluate what intervention is appropriate.
Okay. As you mentioned, every kid is different. Every situation is different. Every environment is different. Mm-hmm. As a social worker, you have your guidelines from this conduct code. What other skill sets as a social worker do you bring to the table when you're trying to intervene in these situations, especially from discussing it with the student first, and then do you also work with the parents as well?
Well, I'm going to hype up our social workers for a second. Okay. I think that's something that's special about us. Is we do care about the community and the parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really one of our sole focuses, is how do we engage our parents and community, honestly, in each of these situations.
Okay.
That can look like a parent conference. Let's bring them in. Social workers, we do home visits often. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll bring a school counselor with us. Mm-hmm. Do we need to use community resources? Because I don't think you can discredit all of our community resources we have here too, where maybe us as the school can't offer it, but we do have a community partner that can do that.
So I
think we try as much as possible. I think sometimes it's hard to get parents to engage, but I think we're trying to become as creative as possible of maybe it's not going to be traditionally you come in, we sit in an office and we talk. Maybe it's, we do need to come to your home and we need to sit in your living room and really be like, what's going on here? And I think all of us are trying to figure out different ways of doing that.
In a lot of communities with a lot of minorities, having a school official come to the house is unsettling for a lot of people because of the trust factor. How have you been received in this community when that has had to happen without specifics? Or even in a challenging situation, how do you position yourself to ease that environment so that you can get your job done?
Absolutely. I think we do our best not just to show up. I think you're going to see that we will be doing phone calls, text messages, emails as much as possible. But sometimes we do. And I think just authenticity, being real with them, being able to build that connection, because it's not all about what happened either. Because honestly, I care about the discipline, but I care more about what's going on with this family and how do you need help. So I think sometimes we focus too much on discipline, but the discipline or the behaviors that are happening, there's so many other roots there. And I think our families really respond when they can tell that you genuinely care about them and not just about the paper that you got from administration saying your kid got in trouble for the fifth time.
Right, right. Your assessment so far, 4 months into this, do you find it to be your involvement so far and the change that this code of conduct has had on the district in the first 4 months, middle of the road, difficulty, or not difficult at all?
I'm going to say it's difficult. I'm not going to lie on this. I do think this is difficult. I think everyone has different beliefs of how this is supposed to play out.
Okay.
But I also think a lot of people were doing this work that didn't know they were doing the work. So I think some of this is just around language, understanding that some of this work's happening and it's not that hard to make some of these simple changes. I loved that one of the first interventions was just meet and greets. So every teacher was expected to stand in the hallway and say hello to the kids as they enter the door. Every kid deserves to get a hello when they enter our doors. That's also not that difficult. So I think kind of taking down some of that stress and trying to help people realize that, yes, this is a big change, which I think that's the biggest hurdle we're going through is the change, but also realizing not everything that's getting asked of you is extremely difficult either.
Dr. Cato, data analysis and discipline, response cycle, calibration exercises, what is all that? Those are words to me. And you see, I just stumbled.
So we are, you know, making sure that we are taking the time for administrators to look at different discipline cases from across the district and work together on how they would respond to it based on what the new code is asking.
Okay.
And so sometimes, more often than not, again, it's like different responses all over the place. And so you can have those conversations in a group and think about, you have a facilitator and kind of bring people to the middle. It's like, okay, well, why would you respond this way? Why are you responding this way? And then you hear the reasoning. And then the other side will say, well, you know, you could do this and get the same result or even better result if you think about it differently. So learning how to use the code and how it's set up, that's all part of the process, all part of the training process, and being able to calibrate you know, what those responses are across the district, because we do have a very transient district, mm-hmm. and students move from school to school, staff move from school to school, and be able to have some consistency across the board is a long-term goal that we have to work on. And so that's why we are doing those exercises, mm-hmm. and monitoring the data. The data is not going to change overnight. You know, you're always going to have people that are going to be gung-ho for any changes, mm-hmm. yeah, about 20%, and then you're going to have another 20% that's going to be like, you know, this is never going to work, mm-hmm. and they'll find every reason, you know, not to do it, mm-hmm. and then everybody else in between is kind of indifferent. They can go either way. They'll do what you ask them to do, mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to do is to make sure that people see that, you know, where the data sits, mm-hmm. and realize and understand the goals that we're trying to get to, that there's all different kinds of ways to get to those goals, mm-hmm. to reducing the exclusionary practices, reducing the responses that result in kids losing instructional time, but you can still, big picture, build capacity in the students to make better decisions so they don't keep repeating the same behavior, that you're not spending all your time, mm-hmm. sending kids home or responding to discipline incidents in classrooms, because mm-hmm. you can be a little bit more proactive. It takes a while to kind of change mindsets of people that are used to doing the same thing year after year,
right.
Responding the same way over and over and over. And right. so that's what we mean by the calibration practices and exercises, and really looking at the data and saying, you know, this group of students, it still has a higher risk ratio of being disciplined or being excluded from school, breaking it down to the school level, breaking it down to the individual students. And like Ms. Andring said, root cause, what is the root cause of some of the behavior? Sometimes it's the adult reaction in the building. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes it's the lack of management in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the challenges that we have is staffing. Mm-hmm. Just like other industries and other school systems right now, you know, we have a lot of vacancies. We have mm-hmm. a lot of long-term substitutes.
Yeah.
We have a significant number of challenges around consistent staffing. Mm-hmm. And so that plays into it as well when you're trying to implement something this large. Is getting those people onboarded, and then by the time you get them onboarded, there may be somebody different in the classroom, or that the class may have moved online because of lack of a teacher or something. And so, you know, that presents a challenge that we probably did not anticipate, per mm-hmm. se, mm-hmm. but something that we're working through. But it does impact the calibration and the consistency behind what we're trying to do.
You mentioned something that just threw me off, because I was going somewhere and then you just said something that reminded me. Remote and in person. Are you finding the same challenges in both of those situations, or is it a little different? Because when students are learning remotely, they can present a different problem being online than they can in person.
And see, now what I meant by remote is more so
the
teacher being remote. We have a virtual academy.
Okay.
I don't think they definitely don't experience the same level of challenges with student behavior that the students that are in person experience. And
okay.
so more so the challenge comes when the teacher is remote.
Okay.
And they're providing instruction to a classroom, and then there may be a teacher assistant inside the classroom, mm-hmm. or a long-term substitute inside the classroom that has to manage the students while that person is trying to teach from a remote setting.
I got you. Let's go to the data. Same question that I asked Ms. Andring. Similar. You were the one charged to implement this entire system.
Yes.
From the beginning, and we had this discussion. Middle of the road. Difficulty, no difficulty at all. What is the data showing?
The data is definitely showing difficulty, but I don't think it's difficulty in the way that it seems insurmountable. It's difficulty in that the numbers are not going to move the way that we might want them to move mm-hmm. immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, there's leading and lagging indicators. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to see a great drastic drop. Mm-hmm. in the exclusionary practices right up front.
Whereas
people may not suspend kids as much anymore, they may assign them ISS more. And so where OSS may go down, ISS is going to go up. But we're also trying to do some different things in our ISS room so that when the students are in there, they're not just in there maybe doing packets or what have you. They're in there actually receiving an intervention or some sort of a reflective activity so that when they go back in the classroom, that they don't repeat the same behavior, that they can reflect on how they can keep themselves out of ISS or keep themselves out of school suspension.
Okay.
You'll see schools that may suspend a student, whereas they may have given them 3 days out of school before, they may give them 1 day out of school and maybe a day in ISS so when they come back in, they can actually work on the reentry. We have a reentry process. They can actually work on that reentry process instead of the kid being out of school and coming back. You know, they will be in ISS and get that same intervention in ISS, and then they can go back in the classroom and hopefully be more successful. And so it presents some challenges, but they're really, I see them as opportunities just to learn and kind of reconfigure the way that we do business. You know, that definitely we can get over that hump.
I was going to ask you about ISS, and you just got me. How is it revamped? So we took care of that. Adjustments that you've had to make based on the data, based on what you've experienced in the first 4 months, what are some of those adjustments that you've had to make in the policy as well as, you know, in your mind as we move forward into this?
Well, you know, I won't give specific examples, but there are things that students do. I mean, you can't account for every little thing that they might do, but there have been things that have popped up that have been kind of like, somebody actually did that.
Creative.
That were not part of the code. And so we, as part of our, you know, revision process, we take notes on, okay, this seems to be something that kids do a little bit more than we ever thought that they would do. And so we'll have to add that to the code next year. There have been, we've had to kind of back up and figure out how we can assess the fidelity of implementation of some of the promotion prevention strategies. Because again, if the teachers and the schools do certain things on the front end, we should not see some of the behaviors that we are still continuing to see. Things that escalate into big things that hopefully, if there were certain procedures, certain basic relationship building with the meet and greets and what we used to call proximity in the classroom. We have what we call first response to behavior concerns and behavior check-ins. Very similar to what we used to call just proximity, being near and a student, near a group of students, anticipating misbehavior before it happened, being proactive with it. Even if you, even outside of the classroom on the school bus, because a lot of times there's things that happen on the school bus that bus drivers, you got 60 some odd kids on the bus and you're one driver. Are there some things that we can proactively do to prevent those problems as well? Because if the kids, some kids, if they can't get to school, then it becomes basically an out of school suspension because they're not going to have a way to get to school. If they have an unpleasant experience on the bus, they come into the school upset, and it could, you know, snowball into other things in the classroom and in the school building. And so being able to kind of reflect on those things and think ahead for next year, or not even next year, next semester even, how do we back up and reset certain things and maybe retrain and reorient, and we're going to do some things with our students at the semester, but there's also some things that probably need to happen with the adults at the semester to just kind of reflect back up and kind of reset certain practices and procedures.
Ms. Andring, same question for you. You come into this with a mindset, you come into this with training, you come into this with orientation. Adjustments you've made that everybody's having to make on the fly as this is implemented, but some of the things that you've adjusted in your mindset as you've gone forward with this.
Well, I think we had to really slow down in the realm of a lot has happened in the last 3 years, worldwide and just here in this community. Mm-hmm. And I think even though this is the closest back to, you know, I'm putting quotes, normal year, these kids have changed drastically in the last 3 years. Okay. So I think some of our standard interventions or behaviors that we've seen, you know, back in like 2017, 2018, we are seeing such a high increase of behaviors now because kids were isolated.
Yeah.
And I don't think we were fully ready for that completely. Mm-hmm. So I think we've had to really evaluate some of these interventions where we need to slow down and start teaching again self-awareness,
okay,
emotional regulation, coping skills. And I think sometimes, like I'm in a middle school where I think we have expectations for these kids to act like eighth graders, but some of them are coming in more like fifth grade or sixth grade. And if you think about it, when they exited schools, that's around the time they were. So I think a lot of us have had to really evaluate what are the students' needs, what are the parents' needs, because I think that's changed a lot. How to re-engage them. So I think as student services, we've really had to come together and say, what are you seeing at your school? How are you handling this different behavior? We've never seen this before. What are you doing? We're going back to the toolbox.
You have to. Dr. Cato, can you speak on behalf of teachers and administrators? What are some of the things that you've noticed, adjustments that they're making to help implement this policy?
And so we have a very large district, and again, you know, you have the 20% that are on board, get it, and can do it. You have the 20% that, you know, are not feeling it, and then you have everybody in between. And so being able to highlight some of those schools that are doing it very well is something that we really want to focus and target for the mid-year, and kind of lift those individuals up. There, we've had a lot of, not a lot, but we've had some administrative turnover, and we have principals who are new to some of our buildings, and so they may not know the community yet. They may not know the students as well as maybe previous administrators did, and so there's a lot of learning that needs to happen. There are some challenging behaviors that present themselves at schools that have seen significant turnover with teachers and administration. And so those are some of the schools that are having to back up and kind of recalibrate and reconfigure. We have something Ms. Andring said made me think about this. In our department, the Learning Supports Department, we have an Office of Behavior Support and Intervention that they work with responding to some of the basic needs of the schools around setting up basic structures to support the code and then responding to those schools that may not be experiencing success with it. They'll go out in a team and address and give some recommendations and some things that principals probably need to do differently. We also have our social, emotional, and restorative practices office, which is sort of that, what Ms. Andring talked about, the self-regulation, students and teachers and adult social, emotional learning and restoration. How do we get on the front end to prevent some of these things? How do we teach and train? And so those are all parts of our department. And then when the behaviors escalate and get to a point where, you know, it doesn't seem like anything is actually working, we also have a set of coaches that can go out and coach around specific behavioral interventions, do observations, and work with specific students that are experiencing some difficulty and giving some resources and strategies to teachers. And they've been very successful in helping teachers deal with maybe individual students in classrooms that may be a little bit more disruptive than the others that aren't responding to some of the tier one basic structures that we have in place.
Why was it even important for you or for this particular system or processing to establish the Office of Behavior Support and Intervention?
But it kind of, we had.
You mentioned that, so you're ahead of me. Now you're getting ahead of me, but I can pick up on it. That's why I wanted to ask this question.
Yeah, we've had these pieces in place, but they were in different departments and they were spread out.
Okay.
And so it was a it was sort of like a common sense type thing. It's like, you know, if this is what we're trying to do, we need to pull these people together all under one umbrella, mm-hmm. so they can work more closely together and respond to the schools, as opposed to we have to go to this division for this piece of work. We have to go to that division for that piece of work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We wanted to pull them all together. And there's still some pieces that we still need to pull together, more so around, like, the academic support.
Okay, okay.
Because, you know, we tend to, we're doing some academic pieces, but mm-hmm. we're primarily looking at the behavioral responses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if we know that if students are academically engaged, they're less likely to behave, mm-hmm, misbehave, mm-hmm, excuse mm-hmm. me. If teachers are experiencing success with the delivery of their academic curriculum, they're less likely to get frustrated with students that may not be in, that may not fully engage.
Okay, okay.
And so, you know, trying to pull together those pieces, and then we have equity pieces as well that we try to pull in to just paint that big picture that this is all really one big project. It shouldn't be splintered off into, we're going to focus on academics, we're going to focus on behavior, we're going to focus on equity, we're going to focus on the social work aspect. It all works together to the benefit of our students.
Okay.
The counseling pieces, the mental health supports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have all of those pieces that we need to pull together under one umbrella.
Okay. Ms. Andring, you're on the front line as a social worker. We've talked about Dr. Cato, we've talked about the social workers and adjustments, we've talked about the administrators. What are some of the adjustments that you're seeing that the students are making?
Ooh.
Is it sinking in what's happening, that the assistance is being given to help them understand why these behavioral issues are occurring and how they can adjust them?
Well, you're making me think of a student that I recently just spoke to, and he literally was like, dang, you don't give up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I don't, and we're going to figure this out. We tried this, that didn't work, and now we're going to try this. And I think that's where I've seen quite a few students start to see, wow, you guys are actually trying something.
Mm-hmm.
I think students are still frustrated, as always, with rules and policies and all of these things, but I also see that they can feel in the air that things are changing and people are trying things.
Okay, good.
And I think some schools are probably doing it better than others, mm-hmm. but I do think they're seeing that people care about them,
mm-hmm.
and that we are here to partner with them. I think a lot of these interventions are about lifting up student agency. You'll mm-hmm. see that a lot. And that really is our focus.
Okay.
I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to work with you
mm-hmm.
so you can be a successful adult someday.
Absolutely.
And I hope that they're hearing that message more often.
Good, good. I like this idea. A student focus group will start mm-hmm. in the spring. We've talked to the community. We've talked to the teachers. We've talked to the administrators, all the experts in putting this plan together. Student focus group.
And so last year we had a group of students, roughly about 100 students from across the district, that came together in small groups to help give input
mm-hmm.
and some guidance to the code.
Mm-hmm.
We want to build on that for this year and kind of bring together the students that are still here in the district that were a part of that group last year.
Mm-hmm.
We want to bring them back and add some additional students in and kind of go through some exercises with them on, you know, how are things going from a student perspective?
Mm-hmm.
What are some additional supports you feel like you still may need
mm-hmm.
At the school that we may be able to add to the code?
Mm-hmm.
If you have not experienced success with behaviors, like if you're a student who gets into trouble, we want to hear from those students as well.
Mm-hmm.
How has this disciplinary response cycle worked for you or not worked for you? How can we better support students who are experiencing continuing to experience difficulty? And so we want to kind of repurpose those groups and kind of come together in a different format, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in the works now, but it will happen. Just the format will be something different than what we did last year.
Okay.
And we want to hear from some younger students. We want to reach out to some of our elementary age students this time as well, primarily fifth graders, to kind of hear kind of what their perspective is from a very young person's point of view with the code work and the supports and things that they feel like they need to be successful.
Okay. In order to get through this year and plan for next year based on what you've learned this year, based on the metrics and the analysis, what's in the works for the plan for 23-24?
So we have a process. You know, we've been working with a group called Engage in Schools that kind of facilitates a lot of our processes and provides our professional development, research-based professional development that we provide to our schools. And so they have a process that they're going to propose to us here in the next couple of weeks that we need to make our own as a district and figure out what players we need at the table.
Okay.
Definitely students, community groups, community leaders will be a part of that. And just thinking ahead, what basic revisions do we need to make? Not just grammatical revisions, but what revisions do we need to make to the code? What additions can we make? Do we need to look at our rights and responsibilities and revise those? Do we need to add additional groups to the rights and responsibilities in the code? Are there violations that we need to look at handling differently? Those are all things that we'll discuss and start making some additions and changes to the current code of character.
Okay. Any other processes from this past summer will be repeated in terms of town meetings and those kind of things?
Those are things that we'll discuss when we get that larger group together, like what may need to happen around that.
Okay.
Since we last talked, this is not part of my department, but we do have a family engagement department now that has a number of individuals that are able to go out and to assist with getting parent voice and getting parent participation. We always have a strong community voice as far as community groups. We're very blessed in this district to have so many different community groups and so many different stakeholders that have a direct interest in what happens in our schools. And so getting them on board and getting their feedback won't be as much of a challenge.
Okay.
I mean, you can make a call today and they'll be willing to hop in tomorrow for a meeting and provide feedback. But getting our parents, getting our student voice heard and getting that registered so that we can move forward is going to be key.
Okay. I've always said, you know, in my many travels in this business, in some major cities and some small cities, Winston-Salem probably has the best atmosphere for inclusion in terms of participation from the I remember talking to, I think it was a city recently, and how they're doing this search for the chief of police, and when they could just actually assign somebody, but they're including the community on this. So I love that fact. In terms of the community, though, how are we going about, or if people in the community wanted to learn more about this particular policy, the metrics and the analysis that you've been talking about, is that somewhere for them to be able to find it?
As we develop reports and as we, you know, analyze our data and issue some of that publicly, we'll make it available online for sure.
Okay.
We still have our code website up, which is the school district website /code at the end. And that's where we will put that information.
Okay.
But we definitely are probably going to do some more community forums. I just getting ahead of the actual planning group. And we need to hear from our teachers, of course, and our administrators have an ongoing dialogue. Definitely hear from them. But all those different stakeholder groups, bus drivers, we want to hear from everybody again on how we can strengthen this for next year and make sure that we're even more on the same page than we may be this year.
Okay. Either one of you, we've talked about all the positives of this code of conduct. Anything that that wasn't effective that you know has to go?
There have been some things that we need to back up and kind of refigure how we can assess the effectiveness of. I don't know if there's anything that I would say needs to go per se. you know, I, from my perspective, I don't know that there's anything that may need to go.
Just how to do it differently.
Maybe tweak. Yeah. We definitely need to tweak some processes and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. You know, figure out how do we onboard new people and refresh and review with folks that have already kind of been through an orientation. Mm-hmm. I don't know that anything needs to go per se.
Okay.
But now Ms. Andring may have a different perspective because, you know, you have a different experience working with the social workers.
Yeah, I was about to go there. What are some of the things that, you know, you're on the front line that you would definitely see as an asset to this code of conduct that's currently not there or something that is causing major difficulty, whether it's parents not really being a part of the process or anything like that?
I can't think of anything that should just go. That's mm-hmm. Nothing came into my mind when you asked that.
Okay,
but
good. That's a good thing.
I think as someone on the front line and with being a part of such a large district, I think we will constantly always say we need more support on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always numbers. That could be even just how to implement it actually effectively at each school.
Okay.
I was in a room full of social workers today, and we each are having different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we don't know the content of the code, but I do think logistically, just because it's on paper does not mean it looks that pretty in play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we're moving forward, is we have a lot of these amazing office of supports, and it's how do we get you actually on the school level to give us, and with the time that we really need, because I think a lot of times you can't just come in and out and think that we got the help that we needed.
Right.
So really evaluating how can we give you long-term support in your building, especially because from student services, it really does come from the top down in this realm, and we need that support. And I think it's there. It's just like, how do we actually get it in?
I think with this policy, as I talked to you before, I think it's much needed because systematically it's better to operate with everybody on the same page rather than people guessing at it.
Right.
I think for this particular policy as we move forward, the community having discussions and hearing discussions about it in this forum, getting the details from those that are in the trenches that are implementing this is highly important. Maybe it's just me. This particular district has so many resources. I think the guideline is there for protection.
Yes.
For the most part, as the emphasis is on, you're in a touchy area to begin with when you're dealing with student conduct. But the policy is there to give you a guideline, and I think with the resources that are available, with all the support, like you mentioned, that the district gets, it's a matter of taking the playbook, if I can use sports analogy, taking the playbook, and in certain situations, everything in the book is not going to fit every situation.
Right.
You have to call an audible at some point.
Right.
So I think that flexibility is highly important, and I think you guys are doing a great job in terms of not just implementing this as a code of conduct, as guidelines, as policy, but also having the wherewithal to know that everything is not always going to work the way that it's laid out.
Yeah, somebody, you know, you hear people say the code isn't working or is the code working.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody made a statement the other day is that, you know, the code isn't supposed to work. We're supposed to work.
Yeah.
The code is the guideline.
Yeah.
We have to make it a lived reality in our district. And so that means that we need to be able to have professional judgment and be able to back up and reassess and recalibrate and reconfigure some of our structures, and it's not going to be perfect, and it doesn't always look pretty.
No.
But we've got to do the work as adults, all adults, that, you know, impact children on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think anything that you take on like this, you have to give 100% effort first.
Yes.
Give your every teacher, every, like you said, bus driver, every janitor, every administrator, every cook, everybody that's involved with the district, if everybody gave 100% of just trying to see, it's not 100% guaranteed that it's going to work, but if you at least give 100% of your skill set to see if it's going to work, then it's easier on the backside to go, okay, this didn't work, So let's make the adjustment there. But when you got, like you said, 20% here, 20% here, and another 20 over here, and another 20 over here, it becomes difficult because we really don't know the effect that it's going to have because everybody's not all in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, anything that we want to add, because we touched on a lot of different things, and I'm glad that you are able to come and update us on this particular code of character, conduct, and support. Anything that we've missed from either one of you?
Yeah, I think this was a pretty thorough. You know, we've touched on a lot of good things. I think we're going to keep plugging along, and we're going to get better. Mm-hmm. That's all we can do. Okay. We're going to work to get better.
Good. Ms. Andrew, anything with you?
I don't think we missed anything either. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm excited to be here. I think that's something really important is to have a lot of the people on the front line that are doing this work to hear their voice, because I know it's a struggle. We're tired. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we know change is needed and that we're here for these kids. So
you don't want to be on the backside of this without a plan. I guarantee that. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. You know, society, what you're going through now is a microcosm of society. Society is divided like that. Mm-hmm. So until we start putting something in place that everybody can buy into, it's probably going to be like that. But you have to put one step in front of the other to get to the finish line, or else what are we really doing?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so I appreciate both of your times. Thank you. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kato, good seeing you again.
Always a pleasure.
Hopefully we can do an update going into the 2023-24 year in May like we did this year.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Good.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.